Gang-related violence has been a growing problem in our society. Just last year, USA Today reported that criminal gangs have swelled to an estimated 1 million members, responsible for up to 80% of crimes in communities across the nation. That membership number is up 200,000 since just 2005. And this isn't just a problem for major metropolitan areas like Los Angeles or New York or Chicago. Gang activity is found in every American city with a population of 250,000 or more. And for cities with a population of 100,000 or more, you'll find gang-related activity in 86% of those cities. Cities such as Decatur, Springfield, Bloomington Normal, Champaign-Urbana. It's all around us. Most regions in the United States will experience increased gang membership and increased gang-related criminal activity, this report concludes, citing a recent rise in gangs on the campuses of both suburban and rural schools. Chances are increasing that we or somebody we know will either have a family member in a gang or become the victim of some kind of gang violence. Now, these statistics might be daunting, they might be surprising to you, but this problem is certainly nothing new. Believe it or not, this menace dates back to ancient times. And the Bible speaks about this problem and what can be done about it. Our text this morning comes from Proverbs chapter 1. A passage that was read for us earlier, verses 8 through 19. And in these words, written thousands of years ago, we find the building blocks to this very real, very relevant problem, as well as steps that can be taken to counteract or even to prevent it from happening. Solomon first points out the worth of parental teaching in verses 8 and 9. He says, "Listen, my son, to your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. They will be a garland to grace your head and a chain to adorn your neck." Solomon points out that it all begins at home. Now, throughout our country, homeschooling has become increasingly a popular alternative to either public schools or the expensive private academies. Yet once again, the Bible has preempted our preferences with the sound principle of parental training. God talked about homeschooling long before it became the end thing to do. And you'll notice in this passage that both the father and the mother are involved here, and sometimes the pendulum swings to one extreme or the other. We think that, well, the mother's with the children all the time, she should be responsible to teach them. Or when it comes to times when correction is needed, you hear that old worn-out phrase, "Wait till your father gets home." We need to be careful that we don't shift too much of this responsibility to one parent or the other. Both are important, and both have a role to play. Proverbs really just echoes what Moses had written even long before that. In Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 4 through 9. "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. These commandments that I give to you today are to be upon your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit up at home and when you are walking along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them to your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates." If you go down in that same chapter, verses 20 through 25, In the future, when your son asks you what is the meaning of the stipulations, decrees, and laws that the Lord our God has commanded you, tell him, we were slaves of Pharaoh in Egypt, but the Lord brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand. Before our eyes, the Lord sent miraculous signs and wonders, great and terrible, upon Egypt and Pharaoh and his whole household. But he has brought us out from there to bring us in and give us the land that he promised on oath to our forefathers. The Lord commanded us to obey all these decrees and to fear the Lord our God so that we might always prosper and be kept alive, as is the case today. And if we are careful to obey all this law before the Lord our God, as He has commanded us, that will be our righteousness. So that's what I call homeschooling. And it doesn't just happen between certain hours of the day, doesn't require textbook homework. Parental teaching happens all the time in a variety of settings. You might be driving in the car, might be sitting at the dinner table, working outside in the yard, or maybe if you have a garden. All of these are opportunities, very ordinary situations, but they're opportunities for teaching and for learning. And when children ask that favorite three-letter question, why, have an answer. And don't make the answer, because I said so. That doesn't really teach anything. Take the time. Take the effort and explain. Now, there is a difference between why and why. Now, there's a difference there. You can tell in the tone. And when the question is defiant, you deal with that differently, and we're going to deal with that later in the series on Proverbs. But when it is an honest question of why do things happen this way, which is exactly what Moses had said there in Deuteronomy 6, have an answer. Explain. Why do we go to church on Sunday? What do we say to that? I don't know, because we always have. That's not going to get very far. Why do we pray before we eat? Is mom's cooking really help? Why do we do that? See, very simple, ordinary things that we take for granted, children wonder, why do we do such things? I heard one comedian say that his wife's cooking was so bad they prayed after they ate. But we need to think these things through, and we need to be ready to teach our children. Now, first and foremost, parents need to teach their children the truth about God and His Word. See, there's no more important subject matter than one's relationship to God through Jesus Christ. So that has to be the beginning. We need to start there. But we shouldn't stop there. See, teaching children the gospel by no means exhausts the parents' responsibility in teaching their children. So also bound up in this principle that we read in Deuteronomy 6 is the duty of teaching our children wisdom for life. Lessons they're going to need as they grow up. The gospel is a necessary starting point, and certainly that should not be avoided. But the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. It's not just the end. And so we need to go beyond the basic truths of the gospel into vital lessons the Bible teaches about character, integrity, justice, discernment, very practical issues of life. That's why we're studying Proverbs. Proverbs gives us this very practical, daily living instructions that, frankly, we need to pass on to the next generation. We cannot teach what we don't know ourselves. So we need to be faithful in learning about God through the Scriptures if we want to pass that knowledge along to our children. Don't expect somebody else to do the job for you. I know that it was fashionable in earlier days to drop the kids off at Sunday school so that the church will teach them. Drop the kids off at school so that the school teachers can teach them. And I'm not trying to downplay the importance of Sunday school or even school teachers. They play a very vital role. But don't pass off all your responsibility onto them. It is up to us as parents, and may I include grandparents. We have such an important role to play. And the reason I include grandparents is because you may remember this from your own childhood or when your children were younger. There's an age in which a child has very little, I don't want to say respect, but they don't listen very well to their parents. I mean, they'll listen to anybody else. What the teacher says at school, what somebody says on television, but if mom and dad say it, nah. I think that age starts about 4 and ends at, you know, maybe 18 or 20. But during that time, when mom and dad are just way out in left field somewhere, you know who some of the coolest people are in the world? Grandma and grandpa. They're neat. We like to go to their house. We like to be around them. That's an opportunity. That's an opportunity we have. Because they want to listen to us more than they want to listen to mom and dad. And we can be also influencing their lives in a very positive way. So mom and dad, grandma and grandpa, we need to lead. And we also need to be sure that we're doing everything we can to back up what we teach with our lives. There's a very popular verse in Ephesians chapter 6. Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and the instruction of the Lord. And I think one of the things that exasperates children more than anything else is when mom and dad say one thing and they're doing something else. It's very confusing. It's very frustrating. We've got to walk the talk. Now, on the other side of the equation, children also have a responsibility to pay attention to what their parents say. Ah, but you don't know my mom and dad, somebody object. They have no room to tell me anything. Not so fast. Parents have the responsibility and the authority given to them by God that children must be taught to respect. Doesn't mean that they're always right. The fact is, we are always going to have to respond to authority in one form or another. And the authority isn't always right. But it's still the authority. And we have a responsibility to that. Furthermore, our parents may not be as out there as we think. I think of Mark Twain, who said, "When I was 14, my old man didn't know anything. By the time I was 21, I couldn't believe how much he had learned in 7 years." So if you're convinced that your mom and dad came from another solar system and have no clue what was really going on planet Earth, just wait a while. You'll find out and come to appreciate that they really knew more than you gave them credit for. And you'll be able to take some of those lessons that they've learned to heart. But the fact is, we're always going to be dealing with somebody over us. If it's not mom and dad, it's going to be a teacher at school. It's going to be a boss at work. Might be the policeman at the side of the road with his little radar gun. There's always going to be somebody over us with authority. We might not like them. We might not like what they say. But we do have a responsibility. And we need to start teaching children early how to deal with authority figures. Proverbs 19:20 states, "Listen to advice and accept instruction, and in the end you will be wise." Our society is one of the few in all of human history that promotes youth above age. Even around the world today, many societies venerate their elders. They look up to them. They look to them and their experience and their wisdom. I think that happens almost everywhere on earth except here. We think youth is where it's at. And people that are older, they're old-fashioned. Their day has passed. We don't need to listen to them anymore. And we miss out a tremendous amount when we reject what they have to say. Now Solomon moves on from parental teaching in verses 8 and 9 to the whisper of peer temptation in verses 10 through 14. He says, "My son, if sinners entice you, do not give in to them. If they say, 'Come along with us, let us lie in wait for someone's blood, let's waylay some harmless soul, let's swallow them alive like the grave and whole like those who go down to the pit. We will get all sorts of valuable things and fill our house with plunder. Throw in your lot with us and we will share a common purse.' My son, do not go along with them. Do not set foot on their paths, for their feet rush into sin and they are swift to shed blood." See, without question, the two most important groups of influence on a young person's life are their parents and their peers. And I would suggest that in the absence of proper parental training, the pool of peer temptation is just about irresistible. Now, when you look at the that Solomon gives, on the surface it seems to be to get rich by exploiting others. The wording here calls to mind armed robbery, possibly even murder. And certainly today this could be expanded to including the selling of drugs, gang intimidation, extortion, all of it with the threat, if not the reality, of violence. But I think the heart of this temptation even goes beyond that. I think it appeals more to a sense of excitement, a sense of empowerment, instead of, "I'm just the little kid that everybody tells me what to do, now I'm going to tell somebody what to do." And it makes you feel strong, and it makes you feel like you're part of the gang, you're part of the crowd. And that's a very important thing, especially when children don't have a belonging. They don't have a sense of identity on their own. It's a very strong temptation for them to resist. And I'm convinced that if they don't find it at home, if they don't find that sense of belonging, if they don't find that sense of identity, if they don't find a sense of who they are from mom and dad, they're going to find it somewhere. They're going to take it from whoever will give it to them. The scriptures are filled with warnings about the danger of going the way of the crowd. Psalm 1:1 states, "Blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the wicked, or stand in the way of sinners, or sit in the seat of mockers." The Apostle Paul wrote, "Do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good habits." As Warren Wiersbe put it, if you're walking with the wrong crowd, you'll end up doing the wrong things. And unfortunately, there are thousands of young people who have ruined their lives because they didn't choose their friends wisely. They have a police record. The physical and mental effects of illegal drugs, an unhappy marriage, simply because they became friends with the wrong people and followed the crowd. "Oh, but everybody does it." Come on, you all heard it if we haven't said it. And every good parent replies with what? "If everybody jumped off a bridge, would you do that too?" But that's a very strong argument in the mind of a young person. But there's more to it than that. And this is something that, again, as parents and grandparents, we really need to teach our kids, because this goes against the grain of what they're going to hear everywhere else. Equality is never subjected to a democratic vote. Just because everybody else says it's okay does not make it right. If you're in a math class and there are 20 students. And the teacher gives a test, and 19 of the students say that 2 plus 2 equals 5. Does that mean it's right? No, that means 19 out of 20 students got it wrong. Because there is a truth. There is a standard. And the same is true when it comes to right and wrong. We cannot just subject everything to a popular vote. And the majority must be right. Just think about it in the Bible. How many times when the majority was dead wrong? Remember the 12 spies that went into Canaan to spy out the land and they came back? You had a majority report, you had a minority report. And it was not 7-5. It was 10-2. Overwhelming majority said, we can't go there. They're too big, they're giants. And we're just grasshoppers. Can't do it. 10 out of 12. The majority must be right. Maybe not. How about the entire nation of Israel when they came to Samuel and said, we want a king, we want a king. God said, you don't need a king, you've got me. They said, no, we want to be a king. We want a king. Why? Because we want to be like everybody else. Sounds like a bunch of teenagers, doesn't it? We want to be like everybody else. God said, okay, I'm going to give you what you want, but you're going to be sorry. Was the majority right? No, they were dead wrong. How about the Sanhedrin that voted overwhelmingly to put Jesus to death? The vote was probably 68-69-0. Pretty overwhelming. Did that make it right? Absolutely not. In fact, I would suggest to you that if we take God's word seriously about human nature, it's doubtful if the majority is ever right. If people are only acting on their own feelings and their own thinking and from their own nature, it's doubtful that we ever get it right. And certainly anybody who makes it easy for us to disobey God is certainly not our friend. We've got to be very careful about the people we allow to influence us, the people that we listen to, the directions that we take. Just because everybody's doing it does not make it right. You know, there's no principle in child rearing that's more vital but probably more neglected than teaching our children how to select their companions wisely. Solomon wrote, he who walks with the wise will be wise, but the companion of fools will be destroyed. And parents and grandparents, we need to take the offensive on this. If we don't help our children select, to help them learn to select for themselves the right kind of companions, the wrong kind of companions will inevitably select them. The responsibility of teaching children how to choose their friends wisely is a fundamental element for successful biblical parenting. Because our kids' moral standards, the decisions they make, the language they use, the things that they do will probably never rise above the level of the people they hang around with. So it's very, very important that we impress upon them to choose the right kind of people to surround themselves with and who they listen to. Now, your children might not like it. They might not appreciate the fact that you're interfering in their lives. But let me give you a news flash, Mom and Dad. You're not in a popularity contest here. The stakes are so much more higher. And the responsibility God gave you as a parent is not to be your kid's best friend. That'll come later. The responsibility you have is to teach them right from wrong, so that when they get out on their own, they're going to have something to go on. So that they can make good choices themselves. And that might mean that you end up in the meanest mommy or the meanest daddy category for a while. That's okay. Trust me, they'll get over it. And in time, they will come to appreciate what you have to say. As Chuck Swindoll writes, "The longer I live, the more careful I am with my choice of friends. I have fewer friends than in my youthful years, but they are deeper friends, treasured relationships." As we read in Solomon's Counsel, "Do not consent to relationships that drag you down and hurt your walk with God. Those who ambush their own lives will get you involved in counterproductive activities that will keep wisdom at arm's distance, and you don't need that." Now, he speaks from years of experience, which is something our children don't have. We can't expect them to have that. That's why it's so important that we teach them. Solomon concludes with the warning of promised trouble in verses 15 through 19. "My son, do not go along with them. Do not set foot on their paths, for their feet run into sin. They are swift to shed blood. How useless to spread a net in full view of all the birds. These men lie in wait for their own blood. They waylay only themselves. Such is the end of all who go after ill-gotten gain. It takes away the lives of those who get it." You see, there's a moral to this story. Those who try to get rich quick pay for their greed with their own lives. Paul writes in 1 Timothy 6, verses 9 and 10, "People who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge men into ruin and destruction." If you don't believe that, read your paper someday. Watch the evening news. We see it happen all around us. "For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Some people eager for money have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs." So the Bible clearly teaches that when you disobey God, when you're out for making a living and doing it any way you can, when you go and hurt others, you're just hurting yourself. When you think you can break the law to make a living, it's never going to work out. It's all going to come back against you. So you're free to take what you want from life, but eventually you have to pay for it. And the price you pay is higher than the value you gain. You usually sacrifice the permanent for the immediate, and that's always a bad investment. Now, this concept doesn't just apply to material possessions. Any kind of sin has a way to come back and bite us, doesn't it? Numbers 32:23 predicts, "You may be sure your sin will find you out." Galatians 6:7 warns, "Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. A man reaps what he sows." And 29:6 we read, "An evil man is snared by his own sin, but a righteous one can sing and be glad." You know, whenever I hear this concept, I always think of that cartoon character on Looney Tunes, Wile E. Coyote. You remember them cartoons? Remember, he'd always get the mail pouch from Acme and have this big, elaborate scheme. He's going to catch the Roadrunner. What happened every single time? It got him. Every time. You'd think he'd learn after a while. He never did. The trap that he set, he always got caught in himself. Sin works the same way. It's just not as funny in real life. To the young people hearing this message, I urge you, listen to the wisdom from verses of Scripture. You have a great opportunity to discover the truth now before you make serious, even life-changing blunders. I'm sure you've heard about people who live and learn from their mistakes. Unfortunately for them, by then the damage is already done. Sometimes that damage is irreversible. How much better it is to learn and live and you can avoid the high cost of tuition in the school of unwise experience. Listen to your parents and your grandparents. Listen to those who have traveled a bit further down life's road. Gain from their experience. Learn from their mistakes. Don't insist on making them for yourselves. And at the top of the list of lessons to be learned is to be careful who you allow to influence your life. You know, you might think that you've got it all under control. You think nobody tells me what to do. I don't listen to anybody. I'm my own man. I'm my own woman. Right. Fact is, we are all influenced. We are all shaped by those we allow to influence us. So be careful who you allow into your life. Now, parents and grandparents, we need to take our duty very seriously. Even if we don't live in the kind of neighborhood where gangs might recruit our children, you can be certain that eventually those kids are going to face tremendous peer pressure to conform to a standard of conduct that is ungodly and sinful. So we must teach them to choose their companions wisely so that they won't be intimidated into the kinds of things that they know they shouldn't do. Let's not allow our children to surround themselves with the wrong kind of peer pressure. We need to instruct them how to choose companions who are going to lift them up. Let's not allow the next generation to become mere statistics.